broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilmsfront, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's show. The date is Monday, the 9th of March, 2020. It is 8:30 p.m. here in Melbourne, starting later tonight as XYZ Live with Maddie Rose and David Hiscock is cancelled tonight because Maddie's unit has got the Optus virus, which is a house internet is quarantined until he said Wednesday when he can get some sort of technician out to cure it. We are live on the Tim Wilms YouTube and DLive channel. I finally got DLive working again, and it stayed working because it's showing up on my feed here through my streaming software. I haven't got Entropy working. That's still the second thing onto the do list. So for those of you who are in the YouTube live chat, I'll be doing this for you for free tonight. But if you're watching on my DLive channel, you can support the production of Wilmsfront by sending through a lemon, the currency of the platform, or even better yet, an ice cream. Because it all helps. I hope you enjoyed those states that were observing Labor Day, enjoyed your day off. On the way here tonight, I got caught on the freeway with all the peninsula traffic because those who have holiday houses are down on the peninsula. Obviously, coming back up for work starting again tomorrow. And yes, so it took me a little while to get here than usual, but well, the good news was is that, well, obviously we'll get to the corona virus socioeconomic impact for a moment, but you would have heard overnight that Russia and Saudi Arabia, they've had a OPEC falling out, and so there's an oil price war now. So even though I was caught in traffic, I got to fill up for at present $1.20 a litre, and it's probably going to go lower to around a dollar. So it's not all bad news. Now, obviously, as the title suggests, it's going to be a corona show tonight. I'll give you an update on new infections of, as this strand of coronavirus is called, COVID-19, but I'll begin by focusing on the socioeconomic impacts of the coronavirus. Now, obviously, the ASX crashed today. It was down 7.3%, worst day since the global financial crisis. But if you're just going about your ordinary business in Melbourne or Sydney or wherever else, you would have known the great toilet paper panic of 2020, which, as it's being known, I'm not going to play the fights that have been captured on camera in supermarkets around Australia. You've probably seen them to death. But yes, as of today, most supermarkets are out of at least toilet paper. They get a couple of deliveries each day, either in the evening or early morning. And customers, they're also buying up paper towels. They're also buying up napkins and also tissues as well. And so Woolworths and Coles, they've reduced their quantity limit for bulk purchases. For Woolworths, it used to be 4 packets of toilet rolls. Now it's down to 2. Coles have reduced it back down to 1. And all the hand sanitizer is kept behind the counter, strict limit of 1 per customer. And even with that, they're still all out. But yes, as I've said before, this is not a supply issue. I mean, there was only that one truck carrying toilet paper that crashed in Brisbane on Wednesday, but all the factories have been working flat out. They're all made in Australia here, so the paper toilet paper printing presses will will be going on as we speak to make sure that the if you've only got a year's worth of supply of toilet paper, you can stock it up for maybe and have a 2 to 3 years supply as well. And now, today, the major supermarkets are rolling out security guards to guard the, as you saw, the fights that we saw, the one that happened in Woolworths in Western Sydney on Saturday morning between those, that mother and daughter and that African woman who just wanted one packet. That mother and daughter have now been charged with a fray. And I think everyone is right that it's a national disgrace, and now it's affecting the people who aren't selfish and buying 1 or 2 years worth of supply and just want to get their weekly worths of supply. Who needs toilet paper when your tree is fully stocked with leaves? That's what a few people have mentioned. I think that's what James mentioned down at his property last week. But what I heard now is that obviously people have been buying paper towels and tissues and napkins as a substitute, but toilet paper is the 3-ply or the different types. They're made so that they can be successfully flushed down the toilet and not clog the drain, but paper towels are not made for that. And so now the sewage plants, they're noticing a lot of blockages because people are using paper towels instead of toilet paper because they can't get any. So there could be a sewage crisis of some point. And yet that's not going to be pretty, both in terms of how it looks and how it smells. But obviously it's been called Australia's national shame, and we're being laughed at all around the world. I saw a few photos from New Zealand. Their supermarkets have still got plenty of toilet paper, but it's just broken in the past 24 hours. I'll share this article from news.com.au. Bugger. Something's happened. I'll share it in a moment, but basically all the other Anglosphere nations, they've started stocking up on toilet paper as well. And obviously we talked about how we don't know how this toilet paper buying panic began, but it's certainly become more contagious than the virus itself in Australia. And obviously the contagion has spread to other nations as well. I think I've got it here. Here we go. Coronavirus toilet paper spreads across the world. So there is one from Canada. Although no amount of toilet paper is going to get rid of the stain that Justin Trudeau is your prime minister. And of course, he can't even tell Iran off shooting down a Canadian airplane full of Canadians who died. So over here, this is over in, where are we, the Costco in the, or Walmart in the United States. And this is over in the UK as well. So I guess we started it here in Australia. It's not one of our greatest exports, I have to say. But yeah, this is obviously, we don't have a pandemic here in Australia, but this just gives you a taste of how a lot of the Australian community are reacting, particularly in a selfish manner. And we talked about on the Uncuckables last Thursday that obviously this is a wake-up call to a lot of people. It's called normality bias, that you just think that everything's going to be the same. Obviously, Australians have laughed at the doomsday preppers, the stockpilers in the United States. Well, obviously, the old Australian attitude is she'll be right, mate, but things are not going to be right. And obviously, I think you should give it a lot more thought, but definitely think about making sure that you have an emergency supply of everything. And maybe Think about getting some sort of bunker where you can be safe. Well, not from any disease, just from the morons that we've seen roaming the streets and the supermarkets the past week. It's not going to be Dawn of the Dead in Australia. It's going to be Dawn of the Brain Dead. And then, of course, we heard on Saturday that a doctor at the Toorak clinic had been diagnosed with coronavirus and come into contact with 70 patients. And he was really eviscerated by the Victorian Health Minister, Jenny Markovits. She said she was flabbergasted that any doctor would do this. Well, the doctor was doxed. I might as well say his name is Dr. Chris Higgins. He's Missy Higgins's father, and he obviously, since he'd been doxed, he went on the record to say, "I came back from the United States with a mild cold. I got over it, so I started seeing patients again. Then I decided to test myself and came back coronavirus." But this is the other thing. It's not just the selfishness in the supermarkets, but the because obviously with social media and email, direct abuse can be sent to people like Chris Higgins and death threats and all those other things. Because basically, there's some people who think that anyone who is infected with coronavirus should be shipped off to Christmas Island, which would cost a lot. I mean, what if the cases keep growing? Are you going to fit 100,000 people, for example, on Christmas Island? And obviously, those people there that send those abuse and think that I know that in this situation, it's if you don't trust the official story from government and the medical profession. I mean, do your due diligence research widely. Don't just come up with your own theories, angry, unhinged from a keyboard, and think that just your feelings, just your nerves is it should be a government policy. Now, to assist with myself going through the economic impact of the coronavirus, I'm going to bring in Detonation host Steel Archer. I'll just give him a call now. You'll have to hear the annoying Skype sound. Hey, Steel, are you there?
Hey Tim, good to see you. Good to see you. How you been, Tim?
Yeah, how have you been as well? There hasn't been a Detonation show for a week. Are you self-quarantining?
I am self-quarantining away from. You said it right. You said it exactly right, Tim. It's not really the virus we got to fear. It's the morons out there. And you know, a lot of people have attacked preppers in this country and in the United States and other countries. And you know, now they're feeling the shame. I mean, what's toilet paper going to do anyway? What are you going to do? Wrap it around yourself so it like so it you don't touch people? Or toilet paper is not going to impact your ability to not get a virus. It's madness. It's stupidness. And like, if people are worried about like a toilet paper crisis, wait till you get a run on the banks. Wait till you get a run on money. Or wait till you get some real crisis. Toilet paper. If there should be anything out there that's like a run on anything. I mean, it should be a run on medical supplies and a run on food and canned goods and all of that stuff. A run on toilet paper doesn't even make sense. It's just human psychology, herd behavior going absolutely nuts. And yeah, I don't like it. And you can see how we end up with bank runs, and you can see how we end up with all this craziness. And the markets, Tim, the markets are reflecting the craziness. I mean, they're all algo-driven bot markets anyway, but I've been telling people over and over and over and over that the markets were going to crash. They're going to crash. And this isn't even the beginning, Tim. This is not even the start of the big mega crash that we're going to see that I've been warning people about. And we can get more into that. But it's good to see you, Tim, and all your audience as well.
So you just I noticed that you started off with a big told you so rant there.
Well, I have told people so. I have told people so, but it's not only that. It's bigger than that. It's much bigger than that. What do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about Australian cases of COVID-19?
I'll just the chat has lit up now that you're on the. This is, I think, your first time on Wilms Front.
Yep.
So your stalker is in the chat. Another. I'll just check who's asked it. It's Svenik, who said transhumanism is going to save us from coronavirus. Can it?
Transhumanism is a very interesting idea. It's a very interesting concept, and you know, a lot of the transhumanist policies, in a science industrial complex, would have eliminated things like COVID-19. I mean, without it, you end up with things like COVID-19. So why not a science industrial complex? America is going to go full ball for a science industrial complex anyway. Welcome to the new world.
All right, so you suggested we start off with a up-to-date factual count of the coronavirus cases and deaths. So I'll just bring that up here. So I've got this from a website rather than Wikipedia called worldometers.info. And so coronavirus cases confirmed throughout the world are 110,313. So it's past the, well, as they say in Australia and Melbourne, the MCG capacity. Deaths, 3,831. This is worldwide, by the way, and recovered 62,395. So over half of those who are infected have recovered, and it's got here active cases 44,000, closed cases 66,000. Obviously that's the deaths plus recovered. So if you do the math here, it's about at a 4% death rate, which is above the common cold, definitely, or common flu, I should say.
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, anywhere over 1% is massive when you're looking at potentially something that can infect the entire planet. So, you know, if it affects the entire planet, what's 1% of deaths? What's 2% of deaths? You could be looking at anywhere like 100 million, 200 million people on any of those stats. So, you know, that's why it's scary to people, but it's kind of the boomer meme. I mean, unfortunately, that's what Max Kaiser was joking about. He was calling it the boomer meme, in the fact that it attacks pretty much just old people. And that's kind of horrific because, we'll see what happens. But yeah, cases are definitely adding up.
We'll go through it by country now. Obviously, this is, our graph is really good because it has total cases per million population. Obviously, China has the most. That's where it started in Wuhan. South Korea is second. Italy is now in, cities are in lockdown now. Schools and universities have cancelled their Serie A matches empty stadiums. Now, Italy, look, 366 deaths. We'll look at Iran, 194 deaths. Australia's travel ban has, last I heard, just on China and Iran, hasn't been extended to Italy and South Korea. And it would have something to do with the fact that China is a totalitarian regime. And Iran is a democracy, but you have to be a theocrat to run an election. So it's not really a democracy. Though some of our audience would like the sort of Christian democratic theocracy electoral system. But going to this total cases, 1 million population, China is actually very low, 56. But you have South Korea, 146, Italy, 122, Iran, 78. And then we have France that is slowly catching up. Emmanuel Macron, France bans gatherings of more than 1,000 people as coronavirus death toll rises to 19. And if we're the Diamond Princess is considered well international waters. So 7 people died on that from that cruise ship. If we have a look at, is Australia even on here? Where is Australia? Here we are down here. So we've got 93 cases at the moment plus 10, I assume that's, what is it, new cases in the past 24 hours, and we've had three deaths. And we've had 22 who've recovered, active cases 68, serious one, and our total cases per 1 million population 3.6. So ours is very low, one of the lowest.
And it could get a lot lower, Tim, if they decided to do what Donald Trump did and shut down the borders, or, you know, put more screening at airports, and maybe possibly stop all the human trade between these two countries, especially with China. China is going to reopen up their economy again, which means they're bound, because their domestic cases that have been proliferating are decreasing. But when they reopen their economy, they will become subject to influence of cases from the outside coming back into China. And I think, you know, I think Donald Trump took a very strong stand in the United States when he basically just shut off all the planes. He called a council of all the major airlines, and he said, you have to sanitize the hell out of all your aircraft and all your passengers, and you have to put massive amounts of screening up. And, you know, we're an island. Us in New Zealand should be able to say the safest places on the planet, except for what, Mauritius or like Jamaica or something. But, we're a first world country that's totally insulated. We could easily survive this. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, we have a bureaucrat called Scott Morrison in charge, and he's just part of this, you know, do it for the economy. The economy is everything. Even though, you know, the economy is fake and phony and it's collapsing anyway, because they want to keep up a veneer of stability and that they're the ruling party.
Well, I'm going to stop you there, because obviously Scott Morrison and his treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, they don't want the economy to go into recession. I think they've accepted the fact now that their prized budget surplus is not going to happen. They released the ads and made the coffee mugs last year back in black, the reason why it's so important for them to reach it is because they mocked Wayne Swan for saying that the surpluses that I delivered tonight, this was in 2012, surpluses every year. And of course, when the 2013 budget came, well, before it, Wayne Swan said a budget wouldn't be achieved. And remember, that was one of the few predictions Peter Van Onselen got right. He said about Wayne Swan and Julia Gillard, I'll shave my head if they reach a surplus. And they didn't, so Peter Van Onselen didn't need to shave his head, so which is one of the more important bets there. But it's also the fact that Scott Morrison was seen to be missing in action during the bushfires. Obviously, there was the Hawaii holiday. The media hate him. They hate his office. After the bushfires, they moved on to the sports rots. I mentioned Peter Van Onselen just then. He's constantly hammering Scott Morrison about everything. Must be the biggest pain in ScoMo's backside that there is. And so Scott Morrison's also overcompensating for the fact that he was seen as missing in action, and he went to these bushfire ravaged communities where he wasn't prepared or anything and tried to shake people's hand. I don't think he'll be shaking people's hands now.
That's a really good point, Tim. Like, because that was like pretty much assault what he did to that woman. I would say, well, not quite, but that was weird how he did that. And yeah, he probably won't be doing that now, will he? You're right. But you know, this COVID-19 thing. I mean, the budget surplus. You mentioned the budget surplus. This is an interesting topic. I mean, Tony Abbott, you know, he was kind of the big budget surplus guy. And the reason you get in a budget surplus is well, interest rates are extremely low right now, so it's extremely cheap to pay off the debt. And when in about 3 years, and this is the thing, 3 years, 2 years, 3 years, when all of the baby boomers in America enter into retirement, interest rates globally are going to go sky high. So if you want to assume government debt, assume it right now, like this year, next year, while interest rates are really, really low, because then it's going to bump up and you're not going to be able to access that cheap interest rate capital anymore. So, you know, budget surpluses are all good. And I totally agree with them in the fact that paying down debt really, really sucks. Obviously, debt nation, right? But, you know, like in times that you actually need to perform economic stimulus and stuff, of course, you need to assume government debt. And it's only on the government. I mean, you know, we can talk about taxes too. And I think that the tax system is a little bit unfair. And stuff. We can talk about those as well. But yeah, I don't see a real big problem with assuming debt when interest rates are really this low, and that the Liberal Party is just trying to get points for score points at the expense of the country.
You mentioned obviously the fact that we are island nations, which obviously protects us from as the technical term is irregular people movement. We've just got the travel bans from China and Iran, which is not just people, it's also goods as well, because a lot of people think that the toilet paper is being sent back to China. Well, how could it get past quarantine, for example? That's the thing. It's not just to use an analogy, I'm not sure if you remember the Simpsons episode where it's, to my knowledge, it's when Marge goes to jail for shoplifting. It all starts when there's a sick factory worker or packing worker in Japan, and he's working when he's got a virus, and he's coughing in all the packages which go to Springfield. And so when, I remember, it's the Simpsons opens up, Patty and Selma open it up, there's all these virus fumes that infect them. And so there's the analogy there. It's not just the globalism, which is the people movement. I differentiate globalism being that open borders, anyone can go anywhere. That's under threat now. Even controlled globalism, such as the European Union, potentially even between Australia and New Zealand, who knows? But also globalization as well. And everyone's been talking about the toilet paper. It's made here in Australia. And for years, the neoliberals, libertarians have been saying, yeah, it's fine that we lose our manufacturing and that foreign ownership is fine because people just get other jobs, otherwhere we want foreign capital and that. But when basically you need to close the borders, obviously the other extreme is autarky, which is stupid, but where you make everything yourself. But we definitely do need to, because nation states aren't going away. We need, for national security reasons, and basically to make sure that there's public order, so we don't have this these sort of panics on a greater scale. We need
You've hit the nail on the head, Tim. You've said it all exactly right. There's strategic advantages to paying in the long run skills and manufacturing plants to exist in your own country. In Australia, you know, by outsourcing everything, America is going through hell right now. I mean, they outsourced their whole medical industry to China. They outsourced all their manufacturing. They outsourced everything. And so America is shutting down en masse. And we are sort of shutting down as well, because a lot of our stuff is produced internationally. But the thing is like, you do need an exchange of goods and services. So, for example, we like to sell raw materials. We like to sell iron ore. We like to sell coal. And remember, Australia has all of the critical resources, you know, lithium and cobalt and, you know, all the other critical resources to a modern economy. And, you know, that brings up the debate, you know, how much of those resources should we export to the wider world, and how much should we keep here in reserve and as a reserve, and actually, you know, even on our currency, because our currency is always kept artificially low, for example, so it can encourage exports and it can encourage things like our mining and our education and our tourism, because then it's cheaper for everyone to come here. So, okay. But why, you know, eventually, you know, maybe we want a high currency. I mean, because as you skill up and as you want to become a manufacturing independent, you want a high currency, you want a strong currency in order to attract foreign capital and foreign investors, not foreign capital, but foreign talent to those high skill things. That I know we're not talking about Kanzuk right now, but I can talk to more about Kanzuk and how that would exist. Did you want to talk about Iran?
We've got a question here from your stalker. What do you think of the market sniper? Is he worth listening to on financial matters?
I don't know the market sniper. I'm really sorry about that. I don't know who the market sniper is. I do know Gregory Manarino, and I think it was very, very interesting, Tim. You've done a great job getting Martin North on data analytics. For that guy for Australia, he's very, very, very talented individual. And I congratulate you on that interview. And I thought that interview was very, very, very good.
Thanks, Steele. You're also in quarantine from Port Film Co-op as well, because he might hunt you down.
Okay.
But before going on to, as you mentioned, Iran, obviously they've had, was it nearly a quarter of the nation's parliament that has got coronavirus, and we saw the deputy health minister at that press conference. He looked very sick, and one of the supreme leader's senior advisors died, and there's allegedly apparent footage of people collapsing in the streets in Tehran and other places, and that these bits of footage that you go viral, because it is an oppressive and suppressive regime, you don't know whether this is like actual footage that's been smuggled out or somebody trying to basically spread misinformation about Iran to hinder the regime, as is the case with China as well. But we obviously know that, well, the fact that General Shalami's funeral, there was people who died in a stampede. I mean, public order is difficult to maintain during ordinary times in Iran.
Yeah, the stampede thing, whatever, but everything else, you know, this is all State Department. If you know anything about the United States, you know they have something called a State Department, and you know who runs that? That's Mike Pompeo, right? And what has Mike Pompeo been doing in the State Department? That is the maximum pressure campaign. So why would, this is biological warfare. It's not that hard to understand. If you actually, there are, and you can bring this up, Tim, if you go to my Facebook, there's actually I have a government source in Iran.
What is your Facebook?
I can demonstrate it to you.
Oh, no. Where can people find your Facebook?
Just, what do you mean?
Oh, well, if people want to, like, which Facebook page they go to, that's what I'm asking.
Oh, I can post it on the Detonation or if you want.
Yeah.
So there's actually an image there of the spread of the COVID-19 throughout Iran, and I will send you the link so you can show it on screen and demonstrate it to the audience, because it's actually a very interesting map. Now, it follows the roads. The virus follows the roads, but this is part of the here it is. I'll share that with you, Tim.
No, don't do it over Skype. No, I'll just go to the Detonation page.
Films.
I'm just bringing out the Detonation page here.
Just send me a message via the messenger, Tim, and I'll send you the link.
We'll put it on the show notes page. We won't dwell too much on it.
There is a map. There is a map, and I will share it on the Detonation page at some point. Yeah, but anyway, so the State Department, Mike Pompeo, it's a maximum pressure campaign, and it's pretty obvious that somebody has, some biological agent has just infected these people as part of the maximum pressure campaign.
Well, there's a lot of sort of theories about whether this is a bioweapon and that. I've actually had to stop watching Luke Radowski from We Are Change, because he's just going tinfoil hat saying, see, I all told you that about all these deep state
bioweapons. I'm not saying it is in any other part of the world. I'm just saying that, with the Soleimani incident where it was a drone strike on one of their top people, that wasn't a conspiracy. That was an ordered thing. That he got assassinated. And America has the security leverage in order to do that and not spark a huge war. and this is the world that we're walking into now. And I don't see why they wouldn't get someone who's infected and just say, you know, just have a walk around Iran and shake people's hands. It's not that hard. And, you know, Iran will probably strike back in a similar way in the United States or something like that. So,
well, we had President Trump potentially exposed to coronavirus because it broke on the weekend that an attendee at the CPAC event that President Trump spoke at on the Sunday, the person who tested positive for coronavirus, he was a friend of the American Conservative Union President Matt Schlapp, and shook hands with him, and then Matt Schlapp shook hands with President Trump. I think CPAC stands for now Coronavirus Pandemic Action Containment, because obviously all the people who attended CPAC over there have got to get tested. And well, this is the thing about, if it is a bioweapon, it's this thing is uncontrollable.
Yeah, and that's the really serious part, Tim. I mean, we wish President Trump health in this, but that's the really serious part. If this is a natural virus that's hopped from an animal to a human that's out of control, and there is no real vaccine, well, then you are looking at something that's potentially very, very serious, especially for people with low immunity systems. Fortunately, a lot of the YouTube that exists is all about gym, so there's a lot of youth out there who are ready to inherit the world. So it's good if you're a young person or a middle, like a 20-year-old something, or it's not very good if you're anybody else, though. It's and children seem to be immune from this as well. So Barron Trump might be looking at something interesting there.
Well, Donald Trump is 73, and obviously, if you've actually seen him lately when he's wearing just the baseball jacket, and you know that I am broadly supportive of Trump, but he looked even fatter than he had previously. He looked really fat in it, and we know that he's over nearly 100 kilos in that, and that is... Like it's obviously being overweight and that age, he's susceptible to that. And I know that Trump and his supporters' paranoia has increased with the coronavirus. They believe that the Democrats are trying to use it to make the United States go into recession. And so he's been quite defensive with his statements about the coronavirus. But because this is a medical issue, if he's using Trumpisms about a medical emergency pandemic, then it's going to backfire his style of presidency.
Yeah, and it's really disappointing because he did cut funding for the CDC, but I mean, he did just sign a bill. That was an $8 billion bill, which is huge, right? I mean, that's a lot of money, $8 billion to battle the coronavirus. But unfortunately, yeah, this is one of the problems with cutting things like the CDC budget and the medical budget. He hurt himself in the long run. And his only other real mistake in a lot of the areas was the fact that he tied himself to the markets. And I said it over and over. I've said, do not do that when the president of the United States. If the markets are roaring, okay, let them roar. But don't tie your name to the market, especially when you're on the eve of, in the next 3 or 4 years, those markets are going to go to zero. No, not zero, but they're gonna tank much more than they have now. And if your presidency and the markets are interlocked in such a way, then you rise and fall with that. And you know, that's unfortunate because it's, who is it? It's like either Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, and both of them are crazy.
Well, Bernie Sanders, his ideas are crazy, but he's clearly of sound mind. He's just repeating the same, we don't want the 1% to get richer, we don't want people to miss out on the opportunity, where Joe Biden is actually, he's always been a gaffe machine way back for the past 30 years, but they're getting way worse. The fact that he didn't know, he thought that Super Tuesday was on Super Thursday, got confused with his wife and his sister. Like he's running basically... against a guy who has all the clear and I'm not going to do a self-diagnosis over the internet, but it looks like dementia.
You said something about 150 million people were killed by guns in America.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of senior moments, a lot of gaffes, a lot of senior moments, but this is why the Democrats like him. This is why they all folded and all endorsed him, because he's very weak and he's easy to control.
Yeah, and Bloomberg
controls the Democratic Party. That's why he dropped out, because Bloomberg would actually be the better president. Everybody knows that, but Bloomberg said, why should I take up all this risk? I'm a billionaire. I can just control the Democratic Party for about $500 million investment, and now I control everything, and now he's just going to go and sit on an island on a super yacht or something and run America if Joe wins.
You remember his famous gaffe during the debate, making Nancy Pelosi speaker, holding the president account. I got that.
Yeah, and this is why the Democrats like him, because he's extremely weak. And you know, Bernie, he can't pull the coalition together to beat Trump. So that's why Trump still would rather run against Bernie. Joe could do it, but Joe's got the establishment behind him. He's got Hillary is pulling those strings. And I tell you what, you haven't seen the end of Obama. I mean, Obama, Michelle, and Hillary. That coalition is yet to come out from behind the curtains yet.
I know there's been a lot of talk that Hillary might be the VP, but she lost the unlosable election, as it was said in 2016. There's no way, and she is just only a year younger than Trump. She's 72. So I think that's just Hillary derangement syndrome there. And I think the running mate will either be Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg. So, say if Joe Biden wins, it's either going to be the first woman president or the first gay president.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying that Hillary is going to take an official position, but the amount of power that she has in the Democratic Party is immense.
She's just one of the many overlords of the Democrat establishment. It's not the Clinton Democrat Party. There's heaps of them. There's been talk of Michelle Obama being the running mate as well.
I wouldn't write that one out. I wouldn't write that off. I wouldn't write it off. Not for Joe. I wouldn't write that off. I know that the establishment would rather Klobuchar or Buttigieg, but I wouldn't write Michelle off either. And plus, Obama is still yet to endorse anybody, so that's kind of interesting.
Even his own vice president.
Yeah, it makes you really think about Joe, right?
All right, let's talk about the oil price war that's erupted between Russia and Saudi Arabia. It's always good when who said that geopolitical instability doesn't have an upside? The fact that there has been a breakdown in the OPEC cartel, along with the United States getting energy independence, because that's what sparked the first oil price war in the early 2000s, the fracking revolution. I mentioned to my audience at the beginning, I filled up for $1.20 a litre. Obviously, I travelled to and from the studio here quite a bit, and so yeah, this is great for me. Gets my petrol bill down. It could plummet to $1 a litre, which is, it's as I said. David Hiscock is calling in. I'll see if I can add him to the call here. He just wants to give an update on XYZ Live. Do you mind if I bring him in?
No, I don't mind what you do. It's your show.
You keep going.
Do you want me to talk? Do you want me to talk about Iran?
Yeah.
So basically you're right. So
No, Saudi Arabia, Russia.
Yeah. So basically you're right, Tim. The big story. All right, David Hiscock is here. I'll continue it after. Let David say his piece and I'll let
Dave speak.
Hey, can you guys see me?
No, yeah. We can't, but that's okay, because I haven't got room on the Wilmsfront graphic for two people, but...
I've got a Corona beer here and everything.
Oh, really? Yes. All right, well, we can't see you anyway, so... So
hang on. How about now?
Yeah, so I'll turn the video off for Steel for a moment if I can.
I'm not trying to steal your thunder there, Steel.
No, you're right there.
Yeah, I've got a... Yeah, I'll minimize...
You're moving me around. How's it going, Steel, anyway? What have you guys been talking about?
There's
We've been talking about Corona domestic policy in Australia. We've been talking about...
Yeah, you're on camera now, Dave, so show the Corona beer.
Here we go, people.
Show it more, like in front of your face. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Who's afraid of the coronavirus? Not me. Thanks for having me on, gentlemen. Maddie's internet actually has caught the coronavirus.
Yeah, that's what we said there, the Optus virus.
Yeah, it's actually the first known case of human-to-internet transmission. So I'm a little bit worried because, you know, like Maddie's dying, but what's more important is that, like, if the coronavirus gets into the internet, it could actually go viral.
Yeah, there we go. We've got a bigger picture now of Dave, and you need to move to your left, Dave. You need to swing to the left.
My left?
Yeah. Yeah, there go. Now we fit all of us in.
Okay, excellent.
Yep, so... Oh, yeah, I gave an update on Maddie's internet status. It sounds like, yeah, was it something to do with like the door? People noticed that there was a hole in the door. Was that something to do with the internet?
A what?
Yeah. Oh, you're too slow to react to that joke, Dave.
I think I must be. I've the corona.
Yes. Dave, when I'm in the studio with Dave, like some witty remark that I make, Dave doesn't get.
I am trying. I'm trying to get your witty remark.
We lost you again, Dave.
Hang on, are we back? Mm.
No. But anyway, yeah.
This is rubbish. Hang on, I'm back.
Yeah. So we had no Matty Rose Live on the weekend, and we also have no XYZ Live tonight. This is your chance to... what's on your mind?
What's on my mind?
Yeah,
How good was my headline?
Which one?
Three foreign fatties fight over toilet paper.
No, so but I'll let you see.
The only improvement I possibly could have made was three foreign fatties fight over bog roll.
You actually watched it, I assume she was African. I should just say black lady. She was in the right because she just wanted one pack, and that mother and daughter, they sounded like they had an Eastern European accent or something. Or they were clearly over the limit, but they're still like, no, it's mine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it obviously... The mother and daughter were wrong, but I just think it's beautiful just to see foreign invaders squabbling over the fruits of our labor here in Australia. They shouldn't be here in the first place, and here they are fighting for what's in our supermarket. I just wish I could have been there. I would have been laughing hysterically, and then I could have had the headline: "White man laughs hysterically as three foreign fatties fight over bog roll."
Do you know what? I'm sorry if I've intervened in your flow, Steel. But since it did hit 9:15 p.m. Melbourne time, get Dave to please explain why there's no XYZ Live. You said you're doing a makeup show on Wednesday night.
Yeah, we'd like to, but let's do this on air. Yeah, what's it? James, he's not on at 9:30 on Wednesdays, is he?
James Sox Higgins?
Yes.
No.
Okay, yeah. We'll be on at 9:30. We'll do an hour show. And that'll make up for the internet troubles tonight. Yep. So, yeah, you can hear Maddie and I talk about sodomites and Christianity and all of the rest.
I'm just noticing with this graphic here, I can like put up to here have some of my Coke, Dave.
So I'm interested in what you got, in what your take is on it, especially yours, Steele. What have you been saying?
On what?
On the coronavirus and how we're dealing with
it. In the long term or in the short term?
Oh. Both. I think in the long term, I think it could be a kill shot for globalism, but I'm interested.
Yeah, that's what we were discussing before.
I can go into the long term theory. Well, because I still want to talk about Kanzik if we can, Tim, eventually. So long term theory is, you're looking at a glimpse into the future of what we've been talking about on the show, which is the breakdown of Bretton Woods, right? I mean, it's super simple. So Bretton Woods has existed for about 70 years. It's the most atypical time in human history, and now it's collapsing. And what you saw with the coronavirus is like a 1.0 of what the total collapse of Bretton Woods will look like. So what does that mean? That means China's going to collapse into a huge heap, into a civil war. That'll mean that Iran might rise out of the ashes and actually go for it. That will mean Turkey and Russia will have to work closely together in order to dominate the Middle East. That means Israel will probably go to war in many fronts again, similar to the Yom Kippur War. That'll be kind of interesting because Iraq is gone now. So that'll also mean that Saudi and Iran nuclear issue will start up again. And America won't care about any of this. America's not going to intervene in any of this. And then if, let's say, hypothetically, that, with China collapsing and increasing rising nationalism in China, they're going to either invade Hong Kong, which is what they're doing now with the police, or they're going to fully invade, which is what their military and Navy have been set up for, their literal components, to invade Taiwan, right? It's just a full-on invasion of Taiwan. It's going to invade Taiwan. And if they invade Taiwan, then... because Taiwan isn't recognized as a proper state, that means that Russia will continue and fully impact, Ukraine, which this 70-year war in Ukraine is going to escalate massively, and the United States it can't be bothered to fight on two fronts. So you're looking at potentially a war in Taiwan, a war in Hong Kong. You're looking at massive troop invasion into Ukraine. You're looking at Turkey continuing in Syria, massively more involved in Syria than ever before. You're looking at, it depends with Turkey. Turkey can go anywhere. It can go down to Syria. It can go up. It could go through Black Sea investments or whatever. But no, it's looking interesting. You're also looking at Japan just rising from the ashes and actually end up will dominate that region. You're also looking at Korea, which is it's racing now for unification. North Korea and South Korea are racing for unification.
Don't hold your breath on that. And terms of Japan, I mean, the Olympics, they've got 12 weeks to decide whether the Tokyo Olympics will be cancelled. And obviously, we know how...
the coronavirus eventually will get sorted out. It'll get, whether Trump does it or not, eventually it'll get sorted out. It'll become part of a normal flu season. Or it'll disappear, like the Spanish flu, like the Black Plague. Most of these things in the long run disappear, and then people go back to shooting each other. So I'm not too worried about it in the short term. I mean, yeah, even if it kills, like, let's say 200 million people, I mean, who cares? There's 7 billion people out there. So, so all the geopolitics will start waking back up, when America leaves. And what you saw with the collapse of trade is a little glimpse into the future. So that, and Korea knows this. So North and South Korea are now racing for unification because they're under threat. Russia wants them dead. China wants them dead. Japan wants them dead. The only reason they exist right now is because the U.S. troops, this is the biggest way to get U.S. troops right on the border with China. Okay. It's not a hard calculation. America wants to be as close as they can to China. Where can they do that? Oh, happens to be Korea. Right, so Korea is actually existing right now because of a few military bases. Everybody else wants them dead. But in the meantime, let's say hypothetically that Kim Jong-un can work things out and can unify, right? That means huge amounts of money. So if you're out there and you want to make a buck, I mean, you're going to, those markets are going to open up. You've got a whole country out there to develop.
Okay, this is, that's a optimistic prediction there, Steele. And the fact that North Korea obviously is being affected by the coronavirus as well, and they're incredibly unequipped. They're a completely isolated country. There's literally no information that comes out of there. So, well, whether will there even be a North Korea for after this is
only attacks people low immune system. Like we said, like the maximum would probably be about 200. Let's say 300 million. Let's say 400 million. How high do you want to go? There's 7 billion people.
But what you're just talking about deaths, which is you're not talking about. Yeah, you get it. Because this show is about the socio-economic impacts of it, and 200 to 300 million people dying worldwide is a tragedy. I mean, a lot of people don't want their nans or gramps to die of coronavirus. They want them to live 5-10 years more. But certainly, we're going to be seeing we just saw today, the knock-on effects. But I think you and I will get to this in a moment.
Can we wallow a bit here, Tim?
What?
That's one of the reasons I've been wanting to do a live stream with Steele.
This is my show, Wilms Front. So if you want to do like a live stream together, do it somewhere else. I've got it. I'm at the front here, so you don't get to segue this show.
Okay, let me just pick one, because I've been waiting for somebody else to talk in the similar kinds of numbers that I've been thinking, but I haven't actually sort of mentioned or published yet. Like, you're talking 200 to 300 million people still.
As a hypothetical, based on if everybody in the world got infected, but you're talking about, like, okay, you're talking about socioeconomic impact. Yeah, you're talking about, like, NAFTA, which is just being redrawn up, right? So America is going to be a-okay. They're just going to go back to NAFTA, back to the North American thing. We have to withdraw to Oceania region. It's just smaller chunks of globalism, which is called regionalism, right? So you're just talking about the rises of regions again. But this is going to happen anyway, regardless of whether or not people care about whether the coronavirus is just. It's something that'll be sorted out, you guys, whatever, and the breakdown in the global system is coming anyway. I mean, it's not just because of the coronavirus, but if the coronavirus kickstart the global collapse in trade, I mean, okay, but you've got to realize the implications of it, and the global collapse in trade is China disappearing as a country.
Yes, because people are gonna realize that, hey, we actually need a local source for manufacturing for if the supply chains break down.
China's finished. That's the end of China. Millions of people are going to die in China now. I mean, this is just,
well, where China says that they've got it. They've now got the containment under control. And remember that graph that I showed you.
I'm not talking about dying from the virus. I mean, that's just a big black box unknown, right? I mean, who knows how many people this virus will kill? But the implications of what I've been talking about in terms of global trade, you've just seen it. Hundreds of billions of dollars of trade just shut down overnight. Did America get affected? Yeah, in a way. Did Australia get affected? In a way, sort of. But you're talking about, this is a glimpse into the future of what we're in store for on a global basis. And this isn't just the virus is just showing us the future of everything I've been saying.
I'm interested in the next domino as well. Like, you're talking about Iran. Why would that kickstart Iran to sort of expand its regional ambitions more than it is already?
Iran is a really old culture, okay? Yeah. It's a really, really old authority in that region, and I mean, they tried to take over Iraq because it was easy to do, you know,
in the 80s. You're talking about, you got to give historical context here. You can't just
even in the contemporary world, where was Soleimani killed? He was killed in Iraq doing missions and stuff in Iraq, right? They fund Hezbollah and they fund all these proxy wars in Iraq. They fight in Syria, right? So like the first shots of the Syrian, the first shots of the Saudi Iran war are being fought through proxy armies, you know, in Yemen and in Syria, and against Israel through Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the largest, you know, most well-funded, you know, terrorist organization on the planet. It's the most sophisticated terrorist organization that's ever been constructed, because it's basically an extension of the Irani army, right? And they conduct operations that suit their political and geopolitical will. Even you remember when they did those attacks in South America for the 1970s, student crisis. You know, they can strike anywhere at any time, anywhere around the world. And that's Hezbollah, right? So, Iran has been trying to take over Iraq now, even while the Americans have been occupying Baghdad, because it's been so easy to do. Because America knocked out all their hard power. ISIS gave it a good go, a solid go. I mean, ISIS was just a terrorist organization that, you know, we can go into that, but it was just a random terrorist organization that took over the Iraqi government, because there was no government. So you think Iran wouldn't try that? But remember, Iran is also bordered by Pakistan, and it's also bordered by all those weaker nations and stans in the north. It's got a navy. Its navy is not very good, but its navy is strong enough to suit up its objectives of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz.
I'm not going to let you two hijack this show anymore, because this is about coronomics. So if you want to sort something out yourself...
I have a whole series of follow-up questions, but yeah.
No, you're goodbye, Dave.
Bye, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody, see you on 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah, it's called Wilm's Front, so I'm at the front of this show. If you two want to, you can go on, what is it, XYZ Live Together or Uncuggables episode.
Well, you invited him on and he started talking. I know it's
It was for a brief update about what's happening.
You're in
with
charge,
XYZ
Jen, so you just take control.
I did take control.
Like Brexit.
Yeah, this was getting out of hand.
All right, what are we
going to
talk about next?
Yeah, there's been a bit of activity in the chat, people commenting that my hair is thick, because there are a few people who thought that I was going bald, but no, this is all my hair. So I've still got lovely, thick black hair. But I didn't want us to get going to gong out the geopolitics talk now, because I want to go back to Australia now. And we've talked briefly about Morrison and his reaction, and there's been talk today about the Morrison government. Frydenberg has hinted at a potential stimulus package, and obviously they haven't wanted to do this because they haven't wanted to blow their budget surplus. And also because they were criticized Kevin Rudd and Wayne Swan for the $900 checks free money during the 2008-09 global financial crisis.
It's so dumb. I actually agree with Labor and with Kevin Rudd's handout. I think this was a very well-targeted package. And, you know, the Murdoch press picked up, you know, every time they spent something overseas, it was like, oh, you know. But actually, a lot of these handouts economically, look at all of the economic indicators, and these handouts usually work a lot better because they're given to people of low income who usually spend them on very quick consumables within their local region, okay? A lot of the other stuff, the tax cuts and the other stuff, it doesn't boost aggregate demand. And what you're trying to do in economics is all you're trying to do for a government is boost aggregate demand. And I think that, you know, the handout, I don't care what people out there say, I think the handout was actually a very well thought out economic plan, and it worked well, and it kept us out of recession. I'm fine with it. I like this idea. I mean, we've tried tax cuts and all that. It doesn't really work.
Let's have a look at because it's as to use one of ScoMo's phrases, it's gossip that's going around at the moment. But this is what Andrew Clonell, the Sky News political editor, he reported as what the stimulus package is likely to. Sorry, that's not a flattering screenshot of Andrew Clonell there. It says here that it'll be distribute close to $10 billion. We're in a $2 trillion economy, so that's a drop in the. Let's see if we can do the maths here live on air. So obviously there's $1,000 billion. So that's what is it? 10%. That was at 5% of the economy. If my maths is correct. No, wait. It's less than 5%. It is, 0.5%. Have I done the math right there?
Not sure. But all I remember is that during the GFC, when the GFC occurred, you know, back in 2007, 2008, that wiped off 5% of the US economy. So if they're using that as an indicator, that's where that number is coming from.
Just a reminder to people in the chat, if you want to ask a question in the chat, please tag my name in it so I can see it, because that bright red does work as a news alert to me. So if you want my attention, do that as well. But I just want to keep going on this. So it's clear, even cash handouts were on the cards to ordinary citizen, but I don't. It's more going to be things like extending the asset write-off to 10, 50 million. It's going to be tax breaks, tax incentives. There's talks of compensating casual workers if their work dries up. So it's going to be a lot of indirect measures. I know that there's been a. Because in any crisis, there's also opportunity. And I know that a lot of the free market libertarian economists have been wanting to take an axe to the superannuation industry. And they believe that this is the perfect time to basically make super contributions voluntary, so everyone gets a 10% pay raise.
Okay. Well, you know, super never really worked out the way that the government wanted them to work out it to work out, and super is tied to the market. So, you know, I don't know. What do you think? I really don't know. I don't know. Super is kind of a really big topic.
It is, but I'm tending to agree with the fact that given that these, well, a lot of the, because it was set up by Paul Keating, and we have the industry super funds, which are run by the unions, and the union executives, they get, what is it, all those 100K plus salaries just to sit on those boards, and you don't have control over your money. They can put it in whatever. And New South Wales Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg, during Senate estimates, he got out of one of the super CEOs that it's entirely legitimate on them to spend money on political ads, even donate to political parties, your compulsory super money.
Yeah, well, that sucks. And that's, well, if everything you said there is true, then that's really sucks.
Steele, don't touch your face there, because remember, you're not supposed to touch your face like this because of coronavirus. I also said that because it's not a good look. Are you a bit mean that? Are you a bit sad that I kicked Dave off?
No, I'm not sad. You just run the show. I mean, I don't have that much to say on Super. I mean, it's compulsory. You put money in it. It doesn't work as effectively as the pension, you know, and your super runs up and down with the markets, and you know that I guess that's good for the markets, but if the markets tank, then your future investment as for a pension tanks, and that sucks, and that's on
Well, we'll have a look at the ASX plunge.
It's more risky than the government just printing cash,
yeah,
right?
155 billion as Tuck and Convest forecasts Aussie recession. I think we're going to get a recession. So it was down 7.33%. End of a horror session not seen for almost 12 years. That's the S&P ASX 200. So it, and to just give you,
yeah,
I'll go to this like. So this is today. This is the 10 a.m. Yep. When the market opened, and then, well, all the way down and at 4 p.m. there. The only thing that went up, look what went up, gold. Gold, which, of course, Ron Paul, of course, you know, you all laugh at the gold bugs and say they're unhinged and that, but it's always going to be the most stable commodity.
Well, it's a commodity, it's money. Gold is anything you want it to be. It's valuable, and it's intrinsically valuable, and it has been valuable for thousands of years. Silver is even better in a way. Well, gold is good as well because you can use it for components in the modern economy, and silver is the same. They use it a lot of manufacturing and a lot of, electricity and electrical devices and stuff as well. So gold and silver, very, very good investments if you've been paying attention. But the problem with gold and silver over the last 20, 30 years now is they've been manipulated on the downside by banks. And you can check that out as Brown's Bottom. Remember Gordon Brown? Remember Brown's Bottom? That is a huge manipulation of the gold, the gold price on the downside, where they sold down from the UK's treasury down to 300 tons of gold from well over 1,000 tons of gold. So this is just central bank has been manipulating gold down on the downside for a long time to mask economic impacts. Does that really mean anything? No, it just means it's a buying opportunity out there if you want to buy gold, because eventually they're going to run out of phony derivatives and futures contracts and fake money to keep suppressing gold and boosting up the markets. But the market's tanking. This is nothing yet, Tim. This is nothing. In the next 2 years, as all those baby boomers move into retirement and there's no generation in America to replace them because it'll be Gen X, the market's where they are now. They're going down. They're not going to stay down forever, because eventually the millennials will come back online in about 2030, and then you'll see the move at the market start to move back towards these parabolic rises. But right now, everything is overinflated. Everything is overinflated, and people have been putting.
I get what you were saying, that we're not going into a recession because of the coronavirus. The economy was going to collapse anyway. I mean, in Australia, we've had no real wages growth. Feinberg's has always gone up every quarter to say the economy's expanded, but ordinary people are not seeing their pay packets increase. And I spoke about with Martin North last week how Trump is just telling the Fed to cut and ease, which means print more money to secure his re-election. And Trump, I know a lot of people think, oh, he's a shoo-in to get re-elected, but as Bill Clinton once said, it's the economy stupid. Economy goes down the gurgler, you're screwed politically, and Trump knows that. And the reason for all this, as we're talking about panic buying at the moment, like normalcy bias, I talked about that. We've had 29 years in Australia without a recession. You and I, well, I was two when the last recession happened. Obviously, I was in diapers when that was occurring. But obviously, you haven't been alive to see any recession, and so people don't know tough times. This is why you have people acting all selfish and that, because they just think that the world is going to continue as it is. They're going to get their Wi-Fi and all of their luxuries, their overseas holidays. But
yeah,
it's
Tim, you're right.
As Paul Keating described the last recession we had, the recession we had to have. Maybe we do. This is the recession we need to have to toughen us up a bit.
Well, can I use that as a segue to Kansas?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know that you're itching to burst out of you.
Yeah. So this is what people really need to concentrate on now, because we've lived in the most atypical time in human history, right? This has been 70 years of Bretton Woods, 70 years of building up countries that shouldn't exist. So Australia should exist. It's a natural country. New Zealand should exist. It's a natural country. It has defined borders and geographies. It's natural. Canada is another natural country. China is not a natural country. Japan is a natural country. A lot of the countries in Southeast Asia are not natural countries, for example, with the exception of something like Indonesia, right? But Vietnam is not really a natural country, for example. So, you know, there's a lot of, we've lived in this atypical time, and now we have this massive opportunity. And this is why I push for Brexit so hard. This is why Brexit is happening, is because now we have to all embrace a political opportunity called Kanzak. And Kanzak is... Kanzak is Canada, New Zealand, UK, and Australia linking up in an international way. Okay, so Kanzak International advocates for the freedom of movement, free trade, and coordinated foreign policy and constitutional dialogue amongst Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. Since our establishment in 2015, the Commonwealth of Freedom of Movement Organization has received significant support from the general public, members of party, political parties, and non-profit organizations. This is Kanzak. So basically, these countries are big countries. You're talking about Canada with a population of 35 million. Well, they're not big, but they integrate very well into each other. So the English speaking rate is 58%, but it's much higher than that because the French Canadians speak English as a second language, which isn't calculated into that. The life expectancy is 81 years. The population is 35 million. The population growth rate is only 0.74. So it's a very low growth rate. The official GDP is 1.5 trillion. GDP per capita, 46,000. Unemployment rate, 7.1. Inflation rate, 1.6. Australia, English-speaking population, 76%. Again, higher because a lot of the people who speak another language speak English as their second language. Life expectancy, similar to Canada's, a bit higher, 82.2 years. Population, 22 million. 25 million now. This is old stats. Population growth, 1.5. GDP, 1.75 trillion. On and on. Yeah, UK, 65 million, with a 90% English rate. The integration of these countries would give us one of the largest militaries on the planet. It would give us a much larger military than everybody else. Plus, we would still be linked in with the Commonwealth, which is 54 countries still in the Commonwealth of Nations, including India. So, I really want people to think about Kanzak because we already share Five Eyes. It would be English. It would be one of the largest militaries on the planet. It would be 100 million people, 180 million people integrated, and you would have freedom of movement between the UK, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and you could share out all that labor costs and stuff like that, and also. As Bretton Woods stands down, we need friends. So if they have problems in Europe, we would assist them with their military. And also we're all friends with America. And it would be a huge block, an alliance network that would work with everybody else. I think this is a really exciting opportunity now that Brexit has happened. And I would like to see political parties be formed around this Kanzak idea in Australia to get Kanzak on the map and people advocating for Kanzak.
Well, as you established during the show, you don't believe that the coronavirus and panic will last, which is, well, that's your opinion, prediction. There are certainly lots of them going around, and well, that's why you're still thinking of the bigger picture. But I think we're going to be with this pandemic and just socio-economic panic for quite a while yet. Thank you, Steele, for joining me tonight. Is Detonation coming back soon?
Yeah, it'll come back. I think we're doing a show tomorrow, so we'll look at that. Yeah, but yeah, thanks for having me on, Tim, to talk about all this stuff. I really want. I think. Look, yeah, the coronavirus. I mean, we've seen this before, Tim. We've seen this with the Black Plague. We've seen it with the Spanish flu. We've seen it with SARS and MERS, and we've seen it a whole bunch of times. You know, so. I mean, these panic, you know, whatever. Again, even if it does kill 200, 300 million people, that's tragedy, obviously. But there's 7 billion people on the planet, don't forget. And a lot of the debt bomb that's going to explode will kill a lot more people than that. And when China collapses, you're talking about a billion people falling into a civil war that's going to, you know, infect the global economy. You know, as America withdraws and as the Middle East wars erupt again, as America leaves, you know, leaves the system as Bretton Woods day comes down. So coronavirus, yeah, whatever. But also you've got to prepare yourselves for more of these things. Polio is coming back because America is going to be leaving. So polio is going to come back now. You know, there'll be no more American intervention in the polio thing. The antibiotics, you know, the antibiotics we've, you know, collapsed where antibiotics won't work anymore. That's coming around the corner. That's not too far away where antibiotics won't work anymore. So, you know, you've got a lot of different diseases and things that are going to pop up. America will be safe for most of them. And they're going to leave the rest of us to swim in the you know, in the big, big blue with all the sharks. So if you're not ready, if you're not ready for this, then you're not ready for the rest of the world. History is about to happen.
Well, that's what I said in my introduction. Like Australians only panicking and getting emergency supplies, and people should even think about also think about getting a bunker as well. Like. I haven't had a recession for 29 years.
The other thing, Tim, is people should be supporting, you know, free media, you know, because you don't want it, we don't want our free media sources to be shut down at a time like this where we need official sources and we need the mainstream media, but we also need free and alternative media as well.
Yeah.
And I think
because you're doing the mainstream media, they're dying, as we saw last week by Australian Associated Press shutting down after 85 years. And we've seen with the coronavirus, the mainstream media, to get the eyeballs and the clicks, they're scaring people out of their wits about the coronavirus, its potential impact, which we don't know. Like, predictions are foolish to make, but obviously... the old expression, be alert but not alarmed. It could be a global pandemic, but don't as you well, even you, like I'll tell you off for saying there could be 200 to 300 million dead. We don't want to sort of think like that could happen, but it hasn't. There's no signs that it will happen.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. I mean, I'm just saying if that happens, it's still irrelevant in the global scheme of things on a population basis of 7 billion people, and the fact that, you know, all the different variables will continue to play. So you still have to think big. I mean, it's thinking big, right? I'm thinking really big, as opposed to, you know, being scared. So yeah. So, but you know, look, I think freedom of the press is really, really important. Someone just said that in the thing, and I think what you're doing is really important, Tim. And I encourage you to keep it up.
Okay. Take care, Steele. And one of the people in the chat has said, read your live chat during your shows because they want to be acknowledged on air like I do. I acknowledge them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well. Yeah. Well. If maybe I'll do that. Maybe.
All right.
If you want me to acknowledge your live chat, you know, there's a Patreon. Put money in the Patreon, and I'll acknowledge you in the live chat. How about that?
All right. Good night, Steele.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, now that Steele's gone, now I'll address what went on in the chat there. I noticed that, well, Dia Beltran is still a moderator for the live chat. She sin-binned Senator Slayer for 5 minutes for spreading fake news about my personal life and my hair. So he's come back now and apologized, which is good. It's 5 minutes to 10 o'clock. Melbourne time, so I'll wrap things up now. There's a few final thoughts I want to leave you with, and one of the side effects of the coronavirus pandemic is that International Women's Day was a complete non-event this year, at least in the West, because obviously women's oppression in Western nations is pretty much non-existent. And so it seems to be that for Western nations, International Women's Day, women's rights, first world problem. But why don't we go over to the Middle East, where they had demonstrations for International Women's Day. This is from the South China Morning Post. Rage against a patriarchal pandemic on International Women's Day. And obviously there's the Middle East section in Pakistan, Turkey, and over in Iran as well, Kyrgyzstan. Women just basically wanting their basic rights in those nations. They were arrested. They were blasted out with sound. So that is Middle East and nations in Africa. That's where International Women's Day, women's liberation, women's rights are really needed. I mean, just look at all. Look at all the freedom that Western women have on Twitter, for example. They're allowed to say whatever they want. And the other issue that coronavirus has swept to the sidelines is the climate emergency. And this is from Al Jazeera here. So, climate change or coronavirus, pick your evil, protesters say. Demonstrators led by Greta Thunberg say global governments have raised more alarm over virus than climate emergency. Yeah, because people have died from the virus. Have you been able to point to climate change deaths? So this was protesters led by protesters at a rally led by climate activist Greta Thunberg in Brussels on Friday denounced governments for taking urgent action against the coronavirus outbreak but failing to treat the global warming as an emergency. So if we go down here, this is what Thunberg said, and I'll do the voice. It is shameful that for a long time the climate and environmental emergency has been ignored. We are still in a crisis. This has never been treated like a crisis, Thunberg told the demonstrators. Some supporters said they had put aside concerns about being infected with coronavirus to crowd and join in the march. It's pick your evil. Do you want to die from global warming or from coronavirus, said Gorham 40. How exactly are we going to die from global warming? Like, are we going to spontaneously combust? That's what I want to know. And the final comment that I've talked a bit about the U.S. Election, that if US goes into recession, Trump could very well lose. We've got Super Tuesday 2 coming up, the biggest prize is the Michigan primary here, and I'm going by Nate Silver's 538 here. This is his prediction. Average forecast pledged delegates. So obviously Biden is the favorite to win here, but Bernie Sanders, he had a surprise upset victory in the Michigan primary in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. And who won the state of Michigan in the 2016 presidential election? The Rust Belt state? Donald Trump did. So Bernie Sanders is still in the race, but it's clear the fix is in and that Biden's going to be the nominee. Because Kamala Harris, remember her? She's the one that Tulsi Gabbard murdered on the debate stage by calling out a hypocrisy on criminal justice reform, and she never recovered from that, Kamala Harris. And of course, Kamala Harris, a former California prosecutor, she believed that Jesse Smollett was attacked by two MAGA white guys in Chicago. She called it a modern day lynching, which it's now, a year later, and, justice is still awaiting Jussie Smollett because he is just been indicted by a grand jury for faking the hate crime. So Kamala Harris, yeah, good DA work there a year ago by thinking that was a real hate crime. Anyway, it's just past 10 p.m. Melbourne time, so I'll wrap it up. Any further questions? I know that Port Film Co-op was salty that I cut Dave off, but as I said, this is my show. I control the agenda completely. The Uncuckables is an open show where I allow free-flowing conversations. Well, I'm just Dave is my co-host for that, so it's a group project, but this Wilms Front is my show. So yes, they were trying to hijack it, so I don't let anyone try and get underneath my show. Anyway, I'll be back tomorrow night for the Tuesday edition of the Uncuckables, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the Uncuckables YouTube and DLive channel. It'll be in the studio myself and Richard Wollstonecroft from the Report from Tiger Mountain, and joining us from Sydney, Reg Penny from Channel Reg on Telegram, and also he's moved over to Telegram, New South Wales Patriots Against the Extreme Left. And then of course I'll be back Wednesday, 7 p.m. Melbourne time, the normal time for Wilms Front, right here on this YouTube and DLive channel. I'm interviewing the leader of Right On Australia, which is a conservative political advocacy group in Queensland, primarily does all its activism there. You would have seen it on, if you're on Gab, they have a Gab account. They're very, very good, very savvy with their memes and that, and they're especially good. They're the quiet achievers of conservative political advocacy. They do a lot of petitions, a lot of lobbying, and they're active in Queensland elections, last year with the federal election, and of course this year with the Queensland state election. Forget Advance Australia, Right On, they've made plenty of strides, so I'm looking forward to that as well. And of course, keep an eye out for more commentary that will be published on the Unshackled.net. Obviously, it's been very light lately, but there will be much more content published this week, in addition to show notes and posts related to Unshackled productions. And of course, if you want to support the work of the Unshackled, you can go to theunshackled.net/membership or make a donation, theunshackled.net/donate. That's all from me tonight, so take care, and I will see you tomorrow. If I can... And I've got the slightly edited outro as well.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilms Front. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows, and to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.